Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. The topic I would like to discuss for this week's program is whether Vice President Mike Pence did the right thing on January 6th in certifying the Electoral College count. And of course, there is even a constitutional debate over whether the Vice President's role is to certify the electors or simply just report the results. The Constitution simply states that the President of the Senate, who would be the Vice President of the United States, shall, in the presence of the Senate and the House of Representatives, open all the certificates, and the vote shall then be counted. The question asked at the recent Republican primary debate was, did Mike Pence do the right thing on January 6th? Here is the question from the moderators. So President Trump's former vice president is on the stage tonight. He has faced hecklers on the campaign trail over his actions on January the 6th. On that day, the vice president moved forward with the certification of the election. Do you believe that Mike Pence did the right thing? Senator Scott, do you believe that he did the right thing? And Tim Scott answered, absolutely, he did the right thing. Asa Hutchinson said, Donald Trump is morally disqualified from being president again as a result of what happened on January the 6th. Chris Christie said, Mike Pence stood for the Constitution. He deserves our thanks as Americans for putting his oath of office and the Constitution of the United States before personal, political, and unfair pressure. Nikki Haley said, I think that Vice President Pence did the right thing. And I do think we need to give him credit for that. Doug Burgum said, happy to answer the question. Mike Pence did the right thing. And Ron DeSantis, he at first avoided the question and then started to talk about how this upcoming election is not about January 6th, 2021, but about January 20th, 2025. But then being pressed, DeSantis said, Mike did his duty. I have no beef with him. But during the exchange, Mike Pence said the following. I think the American people deserve to know whether everyone on this stage agrees that I kept my oath to the Constitution that day. There's no more important duty, so answer the question. I put my left hand on Ronald Reagan's Bible. I raised my right hand and took an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States and ended it with a prayer, so help me God. It was a promise that I made to the American people, but I also made it to my Heavenly Father. Every day for 4 years, I sought to keep that oath, and everyone on the stage needs to make it clear whether or not they will do the same if they earn this job and the confidence of the American people. The American people deserve to know that the president asked me in his request that I reject or return votes unilaterally. Power that no vice president in American history has ever exercised or taken. He asked me to put him above the Constitution. And I chose the Constitution and always will. I had no right. Unquote. And to quote an article in National Review, Mike Pence has made his courage in standing up to Trump's pressure an important theme in his campaign. But to this I would ask, was this courage on the part of Mike Pence in defending the Constitution, or was this a lack of courage in being unwilling to pursue the possibility of serious fraud in the election? It all depends upon one's perspective. Like is often said, one man's freedom fighter is another man's terrorist. Also, one man's courage is another man's cowardice. People can have courage, but is it righteous courage? I mean, Hitler and Stalin could be said to have had courage. The signers of the Declaration of Independence are said to have courage. They wrote, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortune, and our sacred honor. They were risking their lives. They were courageous, but the British called it treason. They called it breaking the law of the land. And here's another question. Did President Trump actually say to Mike Pence, I want you to put me over the Constitution? Well, there's no evidence of that. This is obviously Pence's interpretation of what President Trump was asking him to do. And here's another question. Was Mike Pence defending the Constitution, or was this his interpretation of the Constitution? Does the Constitution even address this issue? Does it give or not give the vice president the right to refuse the certification of the electors? Democrats and the Democrat media would have us believe that this legal question is settled. Well, the question isn't so simple. Congress, not the vice president, ultimately decides whether to accept the votes from any particular state. But the vice president can play a role, or at least have a voice, in objecting to the certification, just like any other member of Congress or any member of the Senate can also object. And that's my concern with Mike Pence's actions, and the concern of those in the Republican Party that believe there was substantial fraud in the election. I mean, legally, there's no question that Mike Pence had to ultimately accept the decision of Congress. Even Trump would agree with that. But there's a whole lot more Pence could have done and said in protest. Well, here's the actual law. The 12th Amendment of the Constitution outlines how the president is to be elected. The states shall designate electors to represent how their states voted in the election. These electors shall then send their votes to the federal government. The president of the Senate, who would be the vice president of the United States, shall, in the presence of the Senate and the House of Representatives, open all of the certificates, and the votes shall then be counted. The person having the greatest number of votes for president shall be the president. So there's no mention there of the vice president having any role in deciding the validity of the electors. However, in 1876, in the race between the Republican Rutherford B. Hayes and the Democrat Samuel Tilden, four states sent conflicting electors due to fraud in the election in those states. Some supported Hayes, others supported Tilden. This was in Oregon, South Carolina, Florida, and Louisiana. The Republicans argued that it was the decision of the vice president to decide whether or not to accept certain electors. The Democrats said no, this was the responsibility of Congress. A compromise was reached, and a congressional committee was created to decide which electors to accept. And because of this controversy, 10 years later, so this would never happen again, Congress passed the Elector Count Act of 1887. The act reserved to the states, quote, the final determination of any controversy or contest concerning the appointment of all or any of the electors. The only way for there to be objections to the validity of the electors and their votes is if one senator and one congressman put into writing their objections. Then the issue was to be debated in both houses for no more than 2 hours. Then Congress was to vote on whether or not to accept the electors and their certification. And this is what actually happened on January the 6th of 2021. Two Republicans, one from the Senate, one from the House, objected, and it went for a vote in both the Senate and the House. 139 Republicans in the House and 8 Republicans in the Senate voted not to accept the electors because of fraud in certain states. And of course, 147 was not enough to stop the certification. Here's an article from the New York Times. The 147 Republicans who voted to overturn the election. And the New York Times posted the picture of each of these legislators. Now, of course, none of the Democrats were going to oppose the election because their man won. Now, I could not find in any of these laws, the 12th Amendment of the Constitution or the Elector Count Act of 1887, any direct reference to the role of the vice president in determining the validity of the electors. Some lawyers say it's there. I don't see it. But a year later, after January 6, 2021, the Democrats put into an omnibus appropriations bill the Election Count Reform Act of 2022, which clarified the role of the vice president in the whole matter. Now, while the Republican debate was going on, Tucker Carlson was interviewing Donald Trump. And President Trump contended that if the original law from 1887 said that the vice president could have nothing to do with objecting to the electors, why would the Democrats want to reform the 1887 bill? And Trump makes a good point. Why would the Democrats want to change the law if it was clear that the vice president had no role? So here's my take. But before I say another word, at this point, I'm going to end my YouTube program and direct you over to my Rumble channel for the rest of the program. Just go to rumble.com, type in God and Country Biblical Exposition, and this is program 272. Now, even there on Rumble, I'm not going to say that Trump won the election or claim some crazy conspiracy theory. But the way it has been with YouTube is that even if I mention the results of the election or refer to some documented, validated report of fraud, my YouTube gets taken down and it's a real hassle to contest the strike and get the YouTube put back up. So why even bother? And I've noticed that quite a few conservative commentators are now doing this, posting only a portion of their commentary on YouTube and then directing their listeners to hear the rest of the commentary on free speech platforms. So over to Rumble I go. Back to the program. Here's my take. The real issue is not whether or not the vice president could or could not legally certify or accept certain electors from certain states. It's obvious that Pence had to go along with the vote of Congress. That Pence congratulated himself for having to follow the Constitution is really a smokescreen hiding the real issue. The real issue is how Pence was too accommodating, too willing to certify the election without raising objections. And that even afterwards claiming that Trump put unconstitutional pressure on him, when it's not unconstitutional for a vice president to defend a case that there was fraud in the election. That's the issue. Pence did not speak up, nor did he believe there were serious questions concerning the outcome of the election. Yes, he had to legally accept the electors from the states. He had to accept the vote of Congress against 147 Republicans. But that didn't mean he had to personally validate the results of the election. He could have stood with Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz, who are vocal about the possibility of substantial election fraud. Back in December of 2021, Pence did an interview with the Christian Broadcast Network explaining his position. And Pence said this: on January 6th, I said that I believe there were irregularities about which I was concerned, and I wanted them to have a fair hearing before the Congress. But from the founding of this nation forward, it has been well established that elections are to be governed by at the state level, and the only role of Congress has is to open and count the electoral votes that are submitted by the states across the country. No more, no less than that. And in January of 2017, I took an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. The Bible says in Psalm 15 that he keeps his oath even when it hurts. And on that day, I could relate to that statement. But I wanted to keep my oath to the Constitution. I know that in my heart of hearts, that on that day, we did our duty under the Constitution. I don't know if President Trump and I will ever see eye to eye on that day, or that many of our most ardent supporters will agree with my decision that day, but I know I did the right thing, unquote. But here's my question for Pence. Do you only believe there were irregularities, or do you believe or suspect that Democrat operatives stole the election? Were you concerned enough to call for continual investigations? Concerned enough to keep the issue going? Of course, there were irregularities in the 2020 election. There are irregularities in every election. But that's not the issue. The issue is whether there was substantial fraud that affected the results. So the real question for Pence and for the other Republicans in that primary debate was not, did Pence do the right thing constitutionally, but do you believe there was substantial fraud in the 2020 election that calls the results into doubt? I would love to hear the candidates' answer to that question. If they said yes, well, according to Facebook and Google and YouTube policy, their statements would have to be censored. How one views January 6th, what Pence did, President Trump, all the indictments, comes down to whether or not one believes there was or wasn't substantial fraud in the 2020 election. The Democrats and the Democratic media have created the narrative that there was no fraud. As Biden said, the election fraud is the big lie. And there are thousands of articles online calling claims of election fraud the big lie. But just because they call it a lie doesn't mean it's a lie. And just because they call it a lie shouldn't shut down all investigation and conversations about the 2020 election. But it has. Because of Republicans acquiescing to the Democrat narrative, particularly Republicans like Mike Pence and Mitch McConnell and Chris Christie, it's greatly contributed to squelching any continual legal investigation into the issue. And it's allowed the Democrats to push the envelope with unjust prosecutions. Rolling over on the part of the Republicans is exactly what the Democrats want. And it may be why they're so adamant to push their narrative that anyone who objects to the election is an insurrectionist. So imagine if the Republican Party stood its ground on election fraud and continued to fight for more investigations. Not only would that have taken the wind out of the Democrats' sails, social media outlets could not have so easily censored investigations into election fraud. That is, if the entire Republican Party was united and vocal in continuing investigations. I mean, the Democrats would have done that. Look what they did with the Russian collusion hoax. Even though it had much less evidence of wrongdoing compared to what's being exposed concerning the 2020 election. Again, it all comes down to what one knows and believes about evidence of fraud in the 2020 election. About a year and a half ago, Trump on his social media platform, Truth, made a statement that Republicans and Democrats rebuked. Here's an article from the AP, and it starts out, former President Donald Trump faced rebuke Sunday from officials in both parties after calling for the termination of parts of the Constitution over his lie that the 2020 election was stolen. Notice that the Washington Post, the writers there, assume that it's a lie. And that's what Democrats want written in every piece. But this is what Trump posted. Quote, a massive fraud of this type and magnitude allows for the termination of all rules, regulations, and articles, even those found in the Constitution. Our great founders did not want and would not condone false and fraudulent elections. I don't find that statement to be controversial, do you? Let's not forget the roots of our nation. Our founding fathers actually defied the laws of Britain because they believed doing the right thing was above the law of Britain. I mean, it's kind of hypocritical to be saying our Constitution needs to be followed no matter what, given the fact that our forefathers said the law of nature and nature's God supersede the authority of British law. If an election had been stolen by one party cheating, the vice president or any member of Congress would have had to object and practice some sort of resistance. The vice president would have had to refuse to certify the elections and then step down. Even though he's the vice president and he has to uphold the Constitution, that doesn't mean he is forced by the Constitution to lie about an election. And the Constitution has a lot to say about treason, which would include election fraud. So responding to election fraud is not a violation of the Constitution. Again, the real problem is that Vice President Pence wasn't really convinced that the election could have been stolen. And that's why he did what he did. If he really believed there was cheating, he would not be claiming he had to follow the Constitution. He would have at least been looking for some other recourse, but as it was, he wasn't looking too hard. You could say, okay, Pence didn't really know the facts, or is too trusting of what some people were saying about the integrity of the election. Okay, but my contention is then he should have had some humility. He could have said, I'm really not sure. There needs to be an investigation. Or I'll certify the election, but I'm going to put my hat in the ring with those other 147 Republicans who object it. But Pence was just too quick to give in to the Democrat narrative. And that's the issue many conservatives have with Mike Pence. And that's why I believe he's going to lose in the primary big time. What if someday it's actually revealed that Donald Trump won the 2020 election? Now, I'm not saying Trump did win the 2020 election, but what I'm saying is that this fraud needs to be investigated, and there should be allowances for discussing various reports of fraud. Imagine what would happen if someday there is actually fraud in the election and internet companies censor anyone who wants to discuss it. And again, what would happen if someday substantial fraud in the 2020 election is proven? Nobody on the left even wants to consider that possibility, but it's a very real possibility. In many legal cases, it takes years for evidence to be compiled. Here's a recent disclosure. Joint Task Force of Michigan Attorney General and State Police hand evidence of major election fraud in 2020 to the FBI, and the FBI buried it. From the report, on October 8th, 2020, the city clerk in Muskegon, Michigan, noticed a female later identified as Brianna Hawkins dropping off between 8,000 and 10,000 completed voter registration applications at the city's clerk's office. Days later, after discovering many of the forms were in the same handwriting and had non-existent or invalid addresses, the city clerk and her supervisor reported the incident to the local police for further investigation. The same woman returned 12 days later on the final day for turning in ballot applications with an additional 2,500 forms, many of which were also found to contain erroneous phone numbers, addresses, and had signatures that did not match those on file for the voters. Officials from the Joint Task Force then interviewed Hawkins. Hawkins explained that she was being paid $1,150 a week to find unregistered voters and provide them with a form so they can get registered to vote or obtain their absentee ballot. So the Michigan Attorney General's office did a criminal investigation and discovered that Hawkins was employed by an organization that set up temporary offices in several swing states prior to the 2020 election. The police report from 2020 revealed that a Tennessee-based group, GBI Strategies, has been in operation since 2014, headed by longtime Democrat Party operative Gary Bell. GBI was active in at least 20 states during the 2020 election cycle. A search warrant served on the Southfield, Michigan location of GBI Strategies discovered semi-automatic guns, silencers, suppressors, hundreds of prepaid cash cards, along with dozens of new burner phones, and numerous completed and partially completed voter registration forms. Records found at the Southfield location further identified additional operations in other states, listing similar assets on hand in those locations. Examination of specific ballot applications turned in by Hawkins revealed that many had a return address from two businesses in Southfield and Auburn Hills, Michigan. This would result in ballots being sent to these commercial locations, which Michigan State Police believed were to be filled out and cast fraudulently. Because the scheme only came to light less than 1 month before the general election of 2020, it was not possible to interdict all of the fraudulent ballot requests or to prevent fulfilled requests from being returned and counted as legitimate votes. Michigan State Senator Ruth Johnson, a former Secretary of State, said, "My estimate is that over 800,000 ballot applications were sent to non-qualified voters in Michigan." And remember, Trump lost Michigan by 147,000 votes. So that report is true. There's no denying it. And so why is Pence claiming to be such a hero? He may have been fooled by the cover-up. Proverbs chapter 25, verse 26, "Like a trampled spring and a polluted well is a righteous man who gives way before the wicked." It may not have been courage. It may have been giving way before the wicked. Mike Pence could have been naive. The Bible has a lot to say about good people being naive. Romans chapter 16, verse 18, "By their smooth and flattering speech, deceivers deceive the hearts of the unsuspecting." Matthew 10, 16, "Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves, so be shrewd as serpents and as innocent as doves." Remember the prophet who came up from Judea to pronounce judgment upon northern Israel? And God told him not to stop and visit with anyone. But he met a false prophet who claimed that he was a prophet of Jehovah just like him. And the true prophet was naive and believed him, and it ended in the death of the true prophet. So why would the true prophet believe this guy? Why would that guy lie about such a thing? Well, this true prophet was a follower of Jehovah, but he was naive. God expects his people to understand the fallen nature of humanity. Romans chapter 3, verse 13. "People are liars. Their throat is an open grave. With their tongues they keep deceiving. The poison of asps is under their lips." Now, I don't know how they do business in Indiana, Pence's home state. But here in New York City, it's assumed everyone's lying. For all of Trump's faults, he at least has some street smarts. He knows how people cheat. Pence might have been too nice for his own good. Now, I'm not saying that Pence needed to be some sort of crazy election denier, but at least he could have supported the questioning and the investigation. It's naive to think that the 2020 election was the most secure election in history, as was said by some of the partisan officials at Homeland Security. Because of new mail-in ballots, fraud was inevitable. Here's a paper. "Most countries ban mail-in ballots because they are so prone to fraud." And here's a piece. "France had mail-in ballots from 1958 to 1975, but they dropped them because of all the fraud." So at the very least, we don't know all the facts. And someday history might take a different view of Mike Pence. By way of conclusion, there's a lesson here that Christians can still have poor judgment. Mike Pence is a professing evangelical Christian. He appears to have saving faith. Pence was born in 1959 in Indiana to Irish Catholic parents who were Democrats. During his college years, he made a commitment to Jesus Christ and called himself a born-again evangelical Catholic. But then in the mid-1990s, Pence joined a large church in Indianapolis, a Protestant church called Grace Evangelical Church. But all that doesn't assure us that Pence has a completely biblical understanding of the role of government. Because back in 2016, when President Trump chose Mike Pence to be his running mate, I did a program about Mike Pence and how he failed the Christian community in Indiana. Christians in Indiana worked very hard to get the Religious Freedom Restoration Act passed in Indiana, a stopgap measure to protect Christians from having to approve and support the gross immorality of the LGBTQ agenda. But once the bill was passed and signed by Governor Pence, the LGBTQ community engaged in the usual tactics of boycotts and lies to discredit the legislation. But rather than standing up for the bill, and rather than waiting for all of the caterwauling to die out and all the media hype to die out, Governor Pence amended the Religious Freedom Restoration Act so that it became, in effect, the Homosexual Freedom Restoration Act. The amended bill codified in Indiana a requirement for homosexual accommodation. It equated sexual immorality with human rights and made sexual orientation and gender identity a civil right. Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council in Washington said this proposal guts the Religious Freedom Act and empowers the government to impose fines on people who follow their beliefs about marriage. But Pence tweeted, quote, "I've signed the Religious Restoration Freedom Act clarification bill, resolving controversy, making clear every person feels welcome and respected in our state is best for Indiana." Did Mike Pence realize what he was signing? He did. Pence is a well-trained lawyer. But apparently he believes Christians ought to be forced to provide business services for homosexual activity. And this is not an uncommon position among some left-leaning evangelicals, because their belief in an American-style Democrat pluralism clouds their understanding of God's requirements for morals in a nation. You see, God is not interested in fairness for evil behavior. There shouldn't be a moral equivalency between morality and immorality. Biblically, the state can prejudice that which is morally wrong. But there are many Christians who hold to a secular view of government where they believe the government needs to support everyone's ideology and everyone's behavior. But that's the path of Sodom. Here is what Pence said in an interview with the Indiana Star about changing the Religious Restoration Freedom Act. Quote, "In the midst of this furious debate, I have prayed earnestly for wisdom and compassion. And I have felt the prayers of people across the state and across the nation. For that, I will be forever grateful. There will be some who think this legislation goes too far and some who think it doesn't go far enough. But as governor, I must always put the interests of our state first and ask myself every day what is best for Indiana. I believe resolving this controversy and making clear that every person feels welcome and respected in our state is best for Indiana," unquote. So is this his guiding principle? What's best for Indiana? That every person should feel welcomed and respected in the state. Well, what about abortionists and pedophiles and transgenders? What exactly is the role of government in enforcing God's natural law. Pence sounds to me like Lot, who sat on the city council of Sodom. Pence was following a popular pluralistic interpretation of the Constitution, but he certainly was not doing right according to the moral law of God. And let me suggest that maybe Pence was doing the same thing when it came to January 6th. Obeying the system, going along with the system, valuing the system above truth, being deceived by the system, obeying men rather than God. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 6, many a man proclaims his own loyalty, but who can find a trustworthy man? Thanks for listening. Thanks for your support. May Jesus Christ reign.